Alarm bells are being sounded by the Food and Drug Administration and the Surgeon General, talking about an epidemic of teen vaping. Even as cigarette smoking is dropping among middle and high school students, the rates of teens using e-cigarettes is soaring. Just one example for you. The Surgeon General says teen vaping is up 78% in just the past year. Dr. Richard Meek is a professor and principal investigator of the Monitoring the Future study at the University of Michigan. He has been studying teen substance use habits. So do you support use of that word epidemic?
Absolutely. Epidemic is actually a technical word in epidemiology, and it refers to any increase that is unexpected. So if you had a bubonic plague prevalence of just 1 in 1 million and it went up to 5 in 1 million, that actually would qualify as an epidemic. So if you take the technical meaning of the term, it definitely is an epidemic.
What strikes you most as you dig into all of these incidence figures that have come up of teens and vaping? What jumps out at you most?
Oh, well, that's easy. In 2018, we survey 8th, 10th, and 12th graders in the 48 contiguous states. Our survey consists of about 45,000 surveys every year. And what we saw was that the prevalence of nicotine vaping among 12th graders increased from 11% to 21%. So that's a 10% absolute increase. We've been doing this for 44 years, our survey, continuously, and that's the largest absolute increase we've ever seen in 43 years. And this is out of more than 1,000 increases in past 30-day use that we've observed. So it's quite substantial.
And yet, you know, here we know that we've seen this measurable drop in teen smoking tobacco cigarettes.
Yes.
Why do you think this same group is enthusiastically embracing e-cigs and vaping, especially the ones made by Juul and all of those flavors like cotton candy and mango? What's going on?
That's the billion-dollar question for the most part. I think you'd have to pay attention to the fact that Juul, which you mentioned, the most common vaping device used by teens, it's easily concealable. You can just put it in your pocket. There's no on and off switch. You just put it to your mouth and you suck in, and then the vapor arrives into your lungs. And so if you were going to smoke a cigarette, you'd have to, in school, find some place to go light up, and then you'd have to spend a considerable amount of time finishing off the cigarette. Whereas with Juul, you take a hit and you put it back in your pocket.
And Juul, correct me if I'm wrong, you can't regulate or dial down the delivery of this nicotine fluid, can you?
One pod of Juul has about the equivalent of 20 cigarettes in terms of its nicotine use. It's actually, in many ways, equivalent or perhaps a little bit higher in terms of its nicotine concentration. And you're right, it only comes in one standardized form. You can't increase it or decrease it at all.
So who's behind this push to get these e-cigs into the hands of young people? And with that, I'm kind of wondering about the way, you know we have existing regulations for tobacco cigarettes that supposedly regulate advertising and sale. How is this product getting into these hands of kids?
Well, if you talk to the people who are in the vaping industry, they will say, oh, they're very much against kids using these vaping devices. And it just so happens that they're making billions of dollars, and they're not returning those billions of dollars either, right? They reap them in, and they use it to expand their business, and many of these vaping companies are now expanding internationally. So it would seem like, well, I guess nobody's responsible at all. However, if you want to take the tact, well, let's follow the money, let's see who's profiting from this, I think that leads straight back to the vaping companies.
In fact, I know there was a big piece in the New York Times about the FDA accusing e-cig maker Juul and Altria, which is the nation's biggest producer of traditional cigarettes, saying, hey, you backed off on your promises to keep these e-cigs away from minors. So we should just remind everybody, last fall, these companies said to the FDA, yes, we agree, pod-based products are a big driver of youth vaping, and they will address the youth vaping problem. And then we hear there's a new agreement giving Juul a great big increase in shelf space in stores where Altria is selling its traditional cigarettes like the Marlboros. So how do you think we keep these teen-friendly products out of the hands of teens?
Well, I think it's useful to look at the incentives here, right? So these companies that are profiting from teen use of vaping devices like Juul, for example, they wanted to raise revenue just a couple months ago. So in that process, you have to come up with a valuation for the company. And Juul was valued at $16 billion, actually, right? So there's a real incentive, not just for Juul, but for any vaping company. If you can go out there and you can get teens to use your product and get them addicted to nicotine, there's billions of dollars waiting for you. And right now, the response by the government has been, well, please don't do that again, but you can keep all the money that you made. And we're going to put up more obstacles to try to prevent this from happening in the future so that more teens do not become addicted to nicotine.
In the meantime, we have a huge cohort who are.
Yes, right. So now. There's that, yeah. Right? And they put up obstacles to try to prevent that from happening in the future. So as you said, the FDA reached this agreement. It's not clear it's going to stick to prevent vaping companies from selling their products in convenience stores and gas stations. So any company that is able to navigate around those obstacles, right? Well, there's $1 billion waiting for you on the other end. So it seems like there's a real incentive for these vaping companies. And I feel quite confident that if the vaping companies couldn't make a profit off teen use of their products, if somehow there was a teen tax or something that you could estimate, it'd be very straightforward, what percentage of the revenue of these vaping companies comes from teen use. And if you required the companies to donate that to charity and say on top of that, that they were assessed a penalty, then I think teen vaping would plummet to near zero levels.
So policy discussions need to be made and advanced along that. I'm with Dr. Richard Miyakuza, professor and principal investigator of the Monitoring the Future study at the University of Michigan, as we look at the dramatic spike in teen vaping. Speaking of the FDA, it will be holding a hearing on January 19th to talk about what do we do to help teens kick the vaping habit. As we said, it's you're getting big, big doses of highly addictive nicotine. What do we know about the best way to do that? Because I'm wondering, is helping a 14-year-old or a 17-year-old kick a nicotine habit the same as helping a 45-year-old kick it?
It's all new, uncharted territory at this point, and I think we can probably look at cessation strategies that have been successful for adults and maybe try to modify those, specifically for teens who have been using Juuls, but I think there's a lot of unanswered questions at this point.
Boy, and when you want to talk about trying to get the word to these kids, this is dangerous. This is not the risk-free fun thing, the cotton candy-flavored pod that you think is so fun. What do you think is missing in the don't use this push toward kids?
Well, the vaping industry has really pushed the idea that vaping is less dangerous than cigarettes, which is true. But at the same time, it's hard to imagine any commercial product that's more dangerous than cigarettes. If there were such a product and the people who regularly use the product, half of them died, I think it would be illegal to sell that in the United States. So this message has come through very clearly, I think, to teens that vaping is less dangerous than cigarettes. But that's a very low standard. I can't think of anything that isn't less dangerous than cigarettes. Nevertheless, the message seems to be that, oh, this is harmless. It's not going to have any negative impact on your health. But I think one of the main risks of vaping is addiction, as you've mentioned, and also there have been many studies that suggest that vaping leads to cigarette smoking.
What further questions do you have? What are you going to watch for from the FDA, from the Surgeon General, and from these e-cigarette companies?
Yeah, well, that's an excellent question. I'll tell you what I'm really interested in. The silver lining to this epidemic of nicotine vaping is that it's a natural experiment in a way. And if vaping does lead to smoking, which is considered one of the most dangerous consequences of vaping, then next year we should see an increase in cigarette smoking, which we haven't seen for 20 years. And that would certainly ring a lot of alarm bells.
And what kind of action do you think that might trigger? Would that be government? Would that be messages, public health campaigns to who? To parents, to the kids? What's needed, do you think?
Well, you know, the tobacco sentiment was very successful. That was in the late 1990s. That's when we see the beginning of this gradual two-decade decline in cigarette smoking. They got together for the tobacco settlement and they figured out how are we going to stop teens from smoking cigarettes. And if we had something like that for vaping and e-cigarettes, it has high potential to be very successful.
Lots to keep our eye on. Dr. Richard Miyakuza, professor and principal investigator of the Monitoring the Future study at the University of Michigan. And hopefully we've prompted some heartfelt conversations in homes around the state.
I hope so. Thank you for having me.